Hey there, I'm Susan.
And I'm Jessica. Welcome to the Eavesdrop on Us podcast, where we have real conversations about what it's like to be in business these days. Pull up a chair and welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome back to the Eavesdrop on Us podcast. I'm your host, Jessica.
And I'm Susan.
And Susan, I was just thinking, because we're at the top of a week. We just started Q2. There's lots of fun stuff going on, ignoring the snowstorm that's impending tomorrow. I'm wondering, like, what is a non-businessy thing that you're into right now?
Auctions.
Okay, say more.
Ah, I love them. Well, I got turned on to them in January. Online auctions. And at first I thought, ugh, wow, weird, strange. Isn't that funny how we sometimes approach new things weird, wow, strange? And I took a little time just to get to know it and check it out. And it just captured my imagination and interest. And I love it because it's so divergent from everything and anything I do. And what it allowed me to do was also get or bid for things that I've always wanted, but never had the funds. I mean, way back when we first started in our married life with my husband, your dad, you know, and also it's very green. And honestly, I don't know if this is what I'm telling myself to say, oh, yay, I'm not putting things in landfill, or if I'm really, really excited about the fact that I'm not adding to the landfill challenge. But I'll be honest with you, they're beautiful items for pennies on the dollar.
Now, I want to just illustrate this. This is not like the auction where you go and it's like people are bidding on like $30,000 pieces of art or something like that. Like, where did you find this? Like, how did you even find the auction opportunities and what kind of stuff are you bidding on?
I'm bidding on collectibles, crystal. I'm from a generation that really does love a beautifully dressed table when you're entertaining. So I've always loved Waterford crystal and its attachment, of course, to Ireland. And I love the craftsmanship. So, but it can be rather pricey to purchase newly produced items. Whereas if I go to the older produced items, equally beautiful, equally enjoyable, nothing has been diminished in terms of its usefulness and attractiveness and the like. The only thing is, there are some folks that just don't entertain like that any longer. We do. So I looked at that, and quite frankly, I've been making a killing because I'm basically spending pennies on the dollars. And no, I'm not going after the greats, Picasso and Renoirs and Monets and Manets and everyone in between. I'm literally going for the day-to-day things that really make me happy. Little figurines like Hummels. They're things that remind me of growing up in a happy time. And not that now isn't a happy time. It just brings back happy memories. So I've enjoyed the heck out of that. And I must say, I've given a number of women who are going after the Pyrex, a run for their money. I've turned out to be a little bandit on that stuff. And I, again, it's just so divergent from what I do day in and day out. But not really, because I love the negotiating. I love the bidding. I love the competition of it. So it's not too divergent. But I even purchased a bike.
I think I saw that in the garage. I was like, huh, what's that?
Well, I have a cruising bike, and cruising bikes retail for over $1,000 a pop. And I think that's ridiculous. So I purchased an older one, and it's in beautiful condition. I mean, beautiful condition. They were downsizing and moving down to Florida, which, hello, you're going to Florida, you can actually use the bike more, but on another day. I lucked out. I paid $100 for this $1,000 plus bike.
But that just makes such a fun story too, because I think all of us, no matter, and I've heard actually, I've listened to a few podcasts where it's like people who work with super wealthy people behind the scenes. It's like, look, it doesn't matter how much money you make. When you get a good deal, when you find a great deal, awesome, right? You want to tell everyone about it, right? So that makes it makes a good story more than anything else.
Yeah. And here's the crazy thing. Could I afford? Of course. Do I want to pay that? No. I'm not an avid biker. I just want a bike that when I do get inspired to go ride a bicycle, I have it at the ready. And there it is. It's pure fun. More than that. And I hope it never becomes more than that, quite frankly.
Yeah. Well, it looked cute anyway. Interestingly, when I was thinking about what am I into that's not business related, I've actually been in this streak where I've been less interested in reading, which is a little wild for me.
Wow,
because
yeah.
I was an English major and then I taught high school English before I became a business owner. I just haven't been into reading fiction. I read a lot of business type books, yes, and business articles, and because I'm really into just educating and teaching myself more business principles.
Yep.
I just haven't had the patience to sit down and read a true fiction book. What I have gotten into are really good TV shows. And because I think back to when I was a teacher, I thought watching TV was beneath me. I thought it was a waste of time. I didn't see any merit in it. And people would talk about oh my gosh, did you watch the such and such show? I'm like, I don't watch TV. But
yes, you did have that. Classic.
I did. Very, 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 very snobby, very academic. And I think now I definitely have just enjoyed watching, because it's still writing. It's still artistic. There's still such obvious value. There always was. I just found that the medium of books were superior to what was on the TV. Yeah. But now I've really enjoyed, this is me geeking out and I think scratching the itch that I used to be able to scratch when I was a teacher, which is I would read something as when I was teaching and I would talk with my co-teachers about it. We'd have these really great conversations. So what I like doing now, and my husband Alex teases me about this, is we'll watch a show. We recently watched The Bear and I thought it was fantastic. I loved it. I was so heartbroken when it was done. Oh my God. I know some people are like, I couldn't take the anxiety. I couldn't take get through the first few episodes. And then it was so good. And I still think about it right now, cause I'm like, that was such a good show. I feel like there are certain shows that stay with you.
Yeah,
and that was definitely one of them. And so the nerdy thing that I love doing is I'll watch a show, I'll finish it. And then I will go and Google reviews of what other people are saying about that show. And I'll read it. And I love, it's like, that's the conversation I get to have. That academic conversation is I get to read what other people are saying about it. And I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. So I call it my Wikipedia Google rabbit hole. I will just go and get lost.
That explains why you were so open-minded to watching Dune 2.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would have taken an army to drag you into the theater to take that in. And I was happily surprised that you, sure, I'll go. Who is this? But I love the fact that you've opened up to welcoming a new way of enjoying. I mean, my gosh, that's a seminal book, Dune, right?
And well, I also think too, it's an allowed, the score, I was trying to think what's the word I'm looking for? The score was created by Hans Zimmer, who now Rachel, my sister, and I have bonded over the appreciation of his music and what he's created. And so I think it's just, I had to allow myself to see Jessica, there is absolutely value with watching television, and not every freaking hour of the day needs to be this productive. If I consume this, it has to benefit me in the business. Because in a way, in a roundabout way, it does, kind of like you were saying about the auctions.
It is absolutely. And, I think what's really interesting too is that we're kind of eating around what we'll be talking about, is that, you can have one thing, whether mm-hmm. that is a median, the media is film, television, book, audiobook, but it all revolves around story. It all revolves around the narration thereof. It all revolves around different interpretations of that said work. Mm-hmm. And I think that's interesting because you can have something, hello, small business, and approach it in very different ways. And it's still strong. It's still enjoyable. It's still interesting. And I adore that. That's one of the reasons why I've always loved small business, quite frankly, is that no matter how you go about approaching it, it has a fantastic story to tell you.
So let's get into today's topic. So
yeah,
what I just enjoy is how we are in the trenches, under the hood. We see all the stuff going on in small businesses. And we also just talk with a lot of small business owners. So I think it's always interesting to see what themes are coming up, what questions are coming up. And I think consistently, as of today, April 2nd, 2024, a big question is around teams, but specifically this conversation and this dynamic of working with subcontractors. Right. So Susan, you when we were kind of brainstorming what we wanted to bring to the table, this was one of the first things that you mentioned. So I'm curious, what has come up for you recently in conversations regarding subcontractors?
Well, I think people often think that it's a rarity to bring in a subcontractor to serve and support your business. And they create a narrative of where there's more and more and more barriers. And one of the reasons why I brought it up is for this reason and this reason alone. There's an external team, which is usually your clients or the consumers of your services that we've talked about. We've talked about internally creating a team that can serve you, your implementer, your integrator, your follow through, your quick starts, you know, your real senior leadership team and the dynamics around that. What I wanted to suggest also and put a fine point on it is, for the visionary, the business owner only, they need a support team. And that team is so incredibly important. And that team consists of a small business attorney, small business commercial insurance, broker, not dealer, broker or agent. We want a broker. It tends to be a mentor and business advisory. And I can break that down as to why, but it also tends to be, who else do they need right away? Hello, bookkeeper. A bookkeeper and your accountant should not be once or twice a year. It should literally be once or twice a month, if not once a week. These individuals are incredibly important to support the visionary so they can get it straight from them as to, what do I need to know? What questions am I not asking that I should be asking? Things are shifting. How can I go about staying ahead of it and not get pulled into it?
Can I jump in and ask this question? Acknowledging that, you know, small business owner needs to have those individuals around them. Mm-hmm. I think what a lot of people are contemplating right now is they're recognizing they do need help, but yeah, they're at a crossroads of do I bring on an employee or do I find a subcontractor? Mm-hmm. And so let's explore your experience with that.
Well, you have to look at the monetized value of each, right? First, you need to understand whatever you hire, that pay grade of that full-time, part-time employee, you need to add about 25 to 30% onto that. You need to take a look at the overhead. You know, we have to pay Uncle Sam and your state and municipal taxes as well. That's super important. A lot of folks think, well, I'll hire them at 55 and 55 is it. It's like, no, 55 plus 25, 30% overhead. So see, it gets a little deep in there, right? Or could I hire them with the intentions of actualizing the outcome of their efforts remember now, a 1099 cannot behave like a W-2 because that's in conflict, but you can focus on the outcomes, right? What outcomes would that employee deliver? Okay, could the subcontractor deliver those outcomes? And you just kind of get past the not having full control and oversight. Just trust that they're a professional and they can deliver. If you can make peace with that, you save so much money and you upgrade the opportunities and offerings. And again, you know, as I'm talking about the support team for the visionary, hello, bookkeeper, hello, advisor. We're talking three disciplines that need to support you in making a well-informed decision for you and your business. So, you know, it's a lot to think about at first, but once you start seeing visually how they add value to your day-to-day, it's magic. You're not alone anymore. It's not living here anymore. You're not stressed and overwhelmed by it anymore. And you reduce your overwhelm and the stress. And guess what comes in as a result of that?
Now, are you talking about bringing in a subcontractor right now?
100%.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was tracking with you.
100%. So if you were to opt for that subcontractor, you know, so you're doing a compare and contrast, right? Mm-hmm. You're trying to really do a SWOT, which is a strength, weakness, opportunity, and threat. You need to look at that overall in terms of your strategy and tactics. Then you need to look at the numbers. You're going to monetize A or B, full-time, part-time employee, or a W-2.
Well, and I think you and I have made a very thoughtful decision to not hire employees. We don't have employees. And I know we crossed that bridge a couple years ago. I think actually it was right before COVID, we were thinking about bringing on an employee and then the pandemic happened. We were like, whew, thankfully we did not do that. Right. Mm-hmm. And so then I think after that, we just made the commitment to working with subcontractors. Now mm-hmm. I am in the weeds day to day interacting with most of our subcontractors. And mm-hmm. so I feel like I've got a pretty unique perspective on yeah. how do you get people who are, could be potentially siloed. You've got one person over here working on marketing. You've got one person over here working on your email CRM. You've got one person over here doing, you know, your bookkeeping. How do you kind of manage all of that when they don't really interact with each other? It's not like you have team meetings. It's not like we bring everyone together and have team meetings. And so I think that one of the biggest things that I have learned with working with subcontractors is what you said, which is they all need a goal. You know, I think.
And you have to drive it. Mm-hmm. So that's, you bring up a terrific point. You assign them a goal. Now here's the key. You as the visionary must drive that achievement. They won't. They're going to give you some, but the reality is more often than not, and this is an unfortunate truth, you have to drive it. Why? It's your skin, not their skin.
Well, also too, we have to remember that they are a subcontractor. They are not, they're not responsible for, you know, coming up with all the strategy. They don't know all the inner workings of what's going on in your business. And so I think the pitfall.
They're a service provider.
Yes.
Means, and you know, in terms of cinema, it's an outcome. They're delivering you an outcome.
Well, what I was going to say is, I think the pitfall is a lot of people be like, I'm going to save all this money. I get this person who's going to do all these things and they're just going to know what I need. They're going to know exactly how to figure out what's in my mind, what needs to be executed. And they just kind of let that person take the reins. And sometimes they will, but I think ultimately, I think a lot of times that ends up leaving the business owner feeling frustrated, or they're like, I don't know why we're not getting the results that I want. And so I think it's just, you kind of treat them like you were saying, as if they were an employee, in the sense of giving them a clear role. Here's what they're doing. Here's what their responsibilities are. And I think, I mean, we definitely experienced that in the beginning. We were like, oh, these subcontractors are great. And then it's like, oh, what are they supposed to be? They're looking to us to figure all this out. They won't figure it out for us.
That's an unfair expectation, isn't it? Really?
It is.
two steps back. And it's really, it's a forced marriage. And it's not always one where everyone has clarity. Sometimes it's a marriage of necessity. So, and let me explain that a little bit. There are times you may want X. All you want is X. But the subcontractor may not have explained, you got to get through Y to get to X. So you become impatient, cranky, less likely to engage. And now you've just scuttled the whole project. Because that's what it is. It's project management, not program, project. A W-2 manages a program. Our subcontractors are 1099s, as we often label them here in the States, or our subs. They manage projects, not programs. And it's important to understand this because it also keeps you disciplined and staying in the lane of, look, respectfully, this is not an employee. This is a contributor. This is a person that's coming in to do something that benefits all or you. And that's it. Their job is not to go beyond or under. It's to deliver on the money. Boom.
Well, and I think it's like anything. It's misaligned expectations are the kiss of death. Say that again.
It's all about communication.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's been the biggest thing that I've really zeroed in on the last year of working with some different subcontractors is just remembering, you know, this is their skill set. This is what we are paying them. And really looking at what am I asking of them, you know, in terms of realistic deliverables. And so I think you have to be very mindful of that. And I actually, this was something I used to be kind of concerned about. This was pre-COVID when I think the two of us were exploring bringing on an employee. And I loved the idea of like, oh, they're just going to be ours and they're our employee and they're not going to work with anybody else. Like we'll have them in totality, we'll have all their hours, all their creative thinking. And here's what I've discovered over the last 18 months. I have loved, and I think we've tried working with different subcontractors. Some have worked out, some obviously don't, but you kind of figure it out along the way. I've actually appreciated subcontractors in the way that they work with other clients because I'm like, what are you finding is working with some of your other clients? Or like, what's
in now?
Yeah, give us intel. Not gossipy intel, but like they're seeing so many different scenarios. They're working with other clients in different industries. And I can't help myself. I'm like, what are you noticing with all this? What's working? So I think that's actually a benefit
100%.
That I don't know why I was so concerned. I think because of a lack of clarity of what we needed or having too unrealistic expectations with some of our subcontractors early on, I was like, I just want someone who's going to be ours and ours alone. And
it does make it easier, right?
Yeah.
Because they can anticipate more and deliver more on that anticipation. The challenge is when you're project managing, it's much more around communication and delegation. And if we're not clear on what needs to get delegated, it just will fall through the cracks. It just will. It's not their responsibility, nor is it in the scope often for them to be distracted by, because it is a distraction for them in their business model. Right? Their job is not to anticipate, think, dream. Their job is to deliver on the deliverables, period. And if they do that in a collaborative manner, ooh, happy day. But otherwise, no, that's their role and responsibility. The role and responsibility, however, of an employee, at least in our construct and mostly with our clientele, is to contribute. I.e. anticipate, offer above and beyond, be solution oriented, not necessarily griping and grousing oriented. And I think that really matters. So for us, staying nimble and staying flexible was incredibly important, outweighed everything else.
Now, well, can you talk a little bit more about why? Because I think a lot of business owners right now are feeling like I should be a little bit more flexible and nimble. So why was that so important to you?
It provided more muscle behind being the commitment of being responsive, not reactive. Reactive is usually you're putting out fires, you're keeping people, you know, from jumping off the plank. You know, it's just in time type management. That's reactive. Very expensive type of management, by the way. Let's use the business intelligence of inquiring among the subcontractors. How's business? How is it, you know, with seeking out your sales pipeline? Is it healthy? Is it drying up? Is it the sales pipeline taking longer to fill? Is the sales cycle itself growing? All of that is business intelligence that we can harvest, bring back to our business, and share immediately with our clients. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's anecdotal, but we marry it with actual studies from, you know, business and industry reports. So now we've got an official word and word on the street to provide them so that we can make some decisions that are...
Can I dig a little bit deeper, Susan? Because I think I want a different answer. Can I ask it differently?
Sure.
When you're looking for Terzakis & Associates, our business, to be nimble and quick, why?
That's a differentiator between anybody else in the market. Most take their sweet time to make a decision. We can respond knowingly and more confidently. Mm-hmm. So if we have a clear understanding as to how, what, why we do and the value we offer to the market, I can jump on it. That's a hedge. And that is a sharp differentiator between small business, medium-sized enterprises, and corporate don't have that flexibility. They don't.
Because of the team and the overhead and, yeah.
And serfs and serfs. And, you know, when you get into the small to medium-sized enterprises and corporate, you end up little fiefdoms, you know, and everybody understands that. If you've been in it, you know it. Well, yes, that might be the party line, but this is how I'm going to go about it. So we don't have that.
I think too, what's also fun is this was my business immaturity early on. I imagined that we graduated. It was like, okay, so you subcontractors only for so long and then you bring employees on. I just didn't know enough about business and I didn't know enough about, you know, what business models could look like. And I thought that subcontractors, and I don't mean this dismissively, I just didn't know any better at the time. I'm like, oh, they're a stepping stone, right? You use a subcontractor and then you move into using an employee. And I couldn't have been further, you know, from the truth, which is even now that we've been in business for 10 years, mm-hmm. we love working with subcontractors and we still have plans to work with subcontractors. And so I think even just the appreciation of they're not just a stepping stone and they're not just...
No, they're essential.
Yeah. Or
success. I would even add, you know, as I was developing earlier at the outset of our call here of, you know, hey, wait a second. We're looking at various teams. We have external teams, we have internal teams, and then we have the teams for the visionary. In this instance, and we do this, this is real world, real time, there's team A and team B. Subcontractor starts getting a little squirrely or a little slow or a little whatever. And it is really out of alignment with how we're doing, why we're doing things that we commit to doing in the marketplace. I already have a backfill. So I always keep a team A and a team B. It's no different than fielding a team. You have team A, the starters, and I have people on the bench. And what happens to if I have a starter on the field that has a little bit of an accident or whatever, God forbid, I have another player to backfill. And you need the same thing with your subcontractors. I would argue you need that also with your employees, but sometimes, you know, small business owners and visionaries just find that too laborious and too much of a distraction. So they just hire the team and they just go forward.
Well, and I think too, what this conversation is bringing up for me is a comment that I hear so often, whether we're doing a one day kind of meeting with a client or whether we're working with a client over a period of months is they all come to the table, I think, with a preconceived notion of what it means to grow and what it looks like to grow and how to grow the business from the internal side, from the team. I think a lot of people think that having employees is required or that having employees is a benchmark of, oh, I got to this level in my business. I have employees. Therefore, I've reached this level of success. Or they might even use it as an excuse not to grow, because I've heard that from some people. It's like, oh, I'm really not interested in having a team. And so I'm quite comfortable here. But we know they're itching for more.
Yeah. I think that's the magic of small business, though, is that you do have a kaleidoscope of stories around this experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's one that's popping in my head of a phenomenal, I mean, truly phenomenal master of home inspection. And I say master because this person is so credentialed. They're on a body now of, you know, professional home inspectors creating standards and operating best practices and so on. So they're very much committed to this. Now, this firm had no less than 15 full-time employees pre-COVID. See, we're going to have a pre and a post-COVID story here. So post-COVID, there is just 3 team members left.
Wow.
And they don't want to do that much again. They only want the 3. They love having the 3 businesses. Fun again, see, because you can bring all these employees on, then it could become your gilded cage. Mm-hmm. Right? So it gets very challenging, not impossible, but certainly challenging when you have all these employees and you kind of look around and you're going, I'm not really digging it.
Well, it's just a lot more added responsibility, stress, pressure, just naturally. I mean, you've got these people who are dependent on you and the business. Yeah,
that's the thing, is that they will not change the business because the overriding responsibility to all those individual families. So, you know, they feel all that much worse. Like, oh my gosh, I can't change my business because look at all these families depending on me. I'm stuck with these employees, as opposed to, no, actually, you can change things around. And we can create scenarios and, you know, a plan, scheme, if you will, for that to happen in a very holistic, happy ending way. It doesn't have to be trauma and drama.
Well, I think just as we've, you know, consistent thread through all of our episodes is that so much of what owning a business is making it work for you. You know, what one person has in their business is not the standard or template for how it has to be for you. Mm-hmm. So Susan, I think it's clear, you know, employees are not necessarily a requirement, but it is, you have to have some thought when it's whether you're wondering, should I bring on an employee or a subcontractor? So if you could give one piece of advice as we round this out for someone who's like, I want to grow, do I bring on an employee or do I bring on a subcontractor? What's a good place for them to just even start?
Truly sit down with your advisor or your financial professional, look at your numbers and look at the greater strategy. That's incredibly important. Those are the 2 steps you must take. Not you might want, no, you must take those 2 steps. Those are the 2.
I want to pause and say this piece of advice alone has been worth you listening to this episode, because that principle of, my gosh, we just saved you from that whiplash of just quickly hiring someone to quickly hire someone and quickly discovering, oh no, I probably shouldn't have done that. So sage advice, Susan. Thank you so much. All right. And with that, I'll see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, remember to hit subscribe, and to stay updated, head over to iwantacollaborate.com. I'm Jessica.
And I'm Susan.
See you next time.